In a quiet moment at a prestigious medical ceremony, Nettie Rosen's carefully constructed life shatters when Kurt Wadd, a ghost from her past, publicly reveals her darkest secrets. This confrontation triggers a catastrophic chain of events, ending with Nettie grabbing her husband's steering wheel, sending them crashing through a hedge and into the sea. As water engulfs them, she feels almost like coming home. This haunting scene sets the stage for a chilling exploration of Denmark's hidden history of eugenics and institutional abuse practices that continued well into the 1970s. What happens when a nation's darkest secrets refuse to stay buried? And what lengths will people go to when justice has failed them completely? Detective Carl Merck heads Department Q, Copenhagen Police's cold case division, alongside his enigmatic assistant Assad and eccentric Secretary Rose. When two seemingly unrelated cases land on their desks, Carl's uncle's suspicious drowning from 1978 and the disappearance of brothel owner Rita Nielsen in 1987, the team reluctantly begins pulling threads that reveal connections to other disappearances from September 1987. All missing persons had ties to an island institution called Sprog, where mentally deficient women were once confined. What makes this investigation so compelling isn't just the mystery, but the team's dynamics. Carl nurses psychological wounds from a previous case that left his partner Hardy paralyzed. Assad demonstrates skills far beyond those of a typical assistant. And Rose's encyclopedic memory proves invaluable as they piece together a puzzle spanning decades. Haven't we all encountered situations where the truth lies buried beneath layers of convenient lies? Behind his respectable public facade as a physician and leader of the right-wing René Linier, Pure Lines, political party, Dr. Kurt Wadd harbors a sinister secret. He heads Den Hemelige Kamp, The Secret Fight, a clandestine network performing illegal abortions and sterilizations on women deemed unworthy of reproduction. His organization targets lower social classes, immigrants, and those with perceived mental deficiencies. What makes Wadd truly terrifying isn't just his actions, but his absolute conviction in their righteousness. He genuinely believes he's serving Denmark's best interests. When he discovers Department Q investigating disappearances connected to his organization, he activates his network to eliminate threats, ordering a journalist's murder, attempting to kill Carl's team through a gas explosion, and dispatching an associate to Madagascar to eliminate witnesses. The calculated coldness with which he orchestrates these actions while simultaneously preparing for his wife's funeral reveals the terrifying duality of his character. How often do the most monstrous acts hide behind the most respectable facades? Through flashbacks to 1955, we witness the horrors of Sprague through Neat's eyes. After being falsely labeled mentally deficient following a rigged intelligence test, she's committed to this women's institution. Daily life is regimented with bells and strict schedules. Women work without pay, and the slightest infractions result in punishment, isolation cells, restraints, and sedatives. Most devastatingly, many women are sterilized without their knowledge or through coercion. When Carl and Assad visit modern-day Sprague, now renovated beyond recognition, they discover a punishment cell with deep scratches on the inside of the door, silent testimony to the desperation of women trying to escape. What makes this storyline particularly powerful is its basis in historical truth. Denmark's eugenics program continued into the 1970s, with forced sterilizations occurring decades after similar programs ended elsewhere following World War II. How many other dark chapters of history have we collectively agreed to forget? And what does this selective amnesia cost us as a society? In alternating chapters set in 1987, we follow Nette Hermansen methodically planning revenge after her husband's death. She returns to Copenhagen determined to eliminate the six people most responsible for destroying her life. Her preparations are chilling: an airtight room, cultivated poisonous henbane, and letters offering each target 10 million krona from her estate. One by one, they arrive. Rita Nielsen, her betrayer from Spurg, Tage Hermansen, her sexually abusive cousin, Viggo Mogensen, who raped her during an escape attempt, Philip Nervig, the lawyer who failed to defend her, and Gitta Charles, her institutional tormentor. Each drinks poison tea, their bodies around a dining table in the sealed room. The final target, Kurt Wad, never appears. Instead, something goes wrong. Nette is killed, and Gitta assumes her identity for 23 years while the bodies remain preserved. Nette's revenge represents both justice and tragedy. While her victims deserved punishment, her actions cost her own life and freedom, a desperate attempt to balance scales the justice system left permanently tilted. Department Q's breakthrough comes at Nette's apartment, where they find Gitta Charles living under Nette's identity since 1987. The discovery of Journal 64 proves pivotal, a record of Dr. Wad's forced procedures that connects him to the disappearances. As pressure mounts, Wad's network of supporters abandons him, driving him to desperate actions. The final confrontation occurs in a sealed dining room, where Carl finds himself trapped with Wad among seven perfectly preserved bodies, victims frozen in time for 23 years. Wad's death by poison carries a poetic justice, claimed by the same methodical planning that defined his crimes. Throughout the investigation, Department Q demonstrates their complementary strengths. Carl sees patterns others miss. Assad's unconventional approach proves invaluable, and Rose's meticulous research helps piece together historical records. Their combined efforts reveal how past injustices ripple through decades, affecting generations and demanding resolution. Don't we all carry this truth, that no matter how deeply buried, the past inevitably surfaces? Despite its bleak subject matter, the story weaves threads of hope throughout its dark narrative. Nette's second life with the Hanstholm family represents a profound transformation, from a woman branded worthless to someone discovering her innate value. Her marriage to Andreas demonstrates how love can flourish even in soil poisoned by trauma. The simple diploma given to her by Erik Hanstholm, declaring no one who can read this can be called illiterate, becomes more than just paper. It's a powerful repudiation of the system that dismissed her potential. The novel's epilogue delivers an emotionally resonant conclusion at Nette's graveside. When Carl, Rose, and a recovering Assad encounter Marianne Hanstholm, the teacher who once showed Nette kindness, she places a wooden board by the grave bearing Nette's personal mantra, "I am good enough." This simple phrase encapsulates both personal triumph and systemic failure. The team members, each carrying their own wounds, form bonds that transcend their professional relationships. Together, they create an unconventional family, bound not by blood, but by their shared mission to give voice to the voiceless. Isn't this the most profound form of healing? Finding connection with others who see our full humanity, especially after systems and institutions have failed us so completely.